And when I brought this boy in to give him a certificate of honor, he cried like a baby. He said, to think of all the trouble that I've caused you, and you're giving me a certificate of honor. But he was the type that would help situations, if you could get a leader, you see, like that. So we didn't have a bit of trouble. It worked very well indeed.
Do you happen to remember his name?
It's gone. I met him at a reunion sometime after that. We had a good laugh over the whole thing. Doing a good, I can't remember his name. But that was quite an unusual incident, I think. But it worked.
Weren't there any public meetings or private meetings at the Polytechnic Auditorium?
Oh, many of them used to come there. They used to use the building quite a good bit. You see, all the commencements used to be held there because it's held 2,500 people.
I was referring to the pre-integration period, when...
Oh, no, we didn't have any of that at all. We worked all that integration business out among ourselves, with the boys and the faculty and me. We were all very close, the faculty and the boys and the principal. Now, Billet King, he ran the school like the Naval Academy, military school. I broke all that down when I went there. My theory was, let's do it together. And we did it together, the boys and the principal and the faculty. It was a very happy time.
Was Dr. Amos Coombs active in education at that time?
I didn't know him. Where was he?
Well, he was one of the founders of the university club downtown.
No, I didn't know him. Billy King was a member of the university club. He used to go down every weekend. I was asked to be a member many times, but I never joined.
Were you ever involved with Walter Sondheim then, after he did?
No, I didn't. See, it was before my time. I mean, I was before his time, Walter Sondheim. You know, all my dealings were with Ike Fields. He was head of the school board for a long time. And then Roswell Thompson, he was head of it for a long time. My superintendent was Dr. Wagline. I was appointed under a Dr. West, who subsequently went to a Florida school. But Dr. Wagnon was the superintendent who appointed me way back in 1921. And he was an excellent superintendent. He was a real scholar. He believed in scholarship. The thing that disturbs me today is that the standards don't seem to be high enough as they used to be in school business. I won't discuss the secular life, but in school business, the standard is so much higher than they are today. So far as I know, Poly has maintained itself. The only thing I heard was that the bright ones at Poly today are better than they used to be, and the poor ones are worse than they used to be. That's the comment I've heard about it. But I understand the school is doing a bang-up job, as it always has been done doing through the years. Billy King started the whole thing. See, to take a manual training school like he did, and in a few years send graduates to a school like MIT and Cornell, and I was one of them, that's quite a feat for any man to do, you see. But he was a dictator. Everybody was afraid of him. Students were afraid of him, and the faculty were afraid of him.
Was Claude Burkert your personal choice for the...
Yes. I wanted Claude as my vice principal, and then I said I wanted him as my principal when I left. And I seem to have had enough weight through all those years and the backing of so many people that I got most anything I wanted at Polytechnic. You see, I didn't have to worry about when I needed the head of the department who would be. I appointed him, and they approved it right away. Of course, I couldn't appoint him. I recommend they appoint it. But nowadays, I think the strength of the school of Poly has been that Billy King was there for 21 years, you see, and built up a family affair like I did from those 37 years. But this way of changing a principal and vice principal from one school to another, I think it's bad. Bad business. I think a man ought to stay longer to build up something. They've got a principal, a good man, probably now, Girardi. He's a good man. He worked under me for 5 years as a math teacher. He's a good one. Good leader. I always say, though, Billy King made the school. I mean by that, You don't understand what I mean. He took a school, nothing but a manual training school, and made it into what it was today. Had it not been for Billy King, there wouldn't have been a Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. What I claim I did, my greatest contribution was I gave a heart to the school, put a heart into the school. He bought the scholarship, I maintained it, but I brought a heart into the school, and a sort of a family affair. That's the reason we have so many reunions. We have 7 reunions this year. Think of it. That's a lot of reunion for a high school, and they're well attended. They come from all over the country. 7 of them in 1 year. And incidentally, as I told you, I think Billy King approved my plan of having 3 programs before he died, which made me feel very happy because he loved that school as much as I did, but in a different sort of way.
How did you set up the faculty at Polytechnic?
Well, I found a strong faculty, inherited a strong faculty from Billy King, a strong faculty, and maintained it during the years. I think it was an exceptionally strong faculty. Of course, I've lost track of it now because it's been since 58 this year. I don't get over there anymore. I told them I wouldn't go back anymore. I used to lose so much of my time by the old retired teachers coming back. So I said to them, I'm not coming back unless you invite me for things. And the only time I used to go back was at the Christmas assembly. And I try to give the boards a little pep talk.
Do you remember any of the faculty members?
Oh, there. Yes, indeed. Mr. Wilhelm was the head of the math department, and Mr. Wells, head of the English department, and Mr. Richardson, head of the engineering department, and Mr. Hall, head of the science department. And Mr. Randerson, incidentally still living, head of the practice department. I think that was the whole crowd. Mr. Jones was head of the foreign language department. That was all of them. They were heads of departments. There was a strong group of teachers, and very cooperative. And all of them were older than I, all of them. But I grew up, as we all do.
Were they with you when you retired from Poly?
Yes. No, most of them had gone. A good many of them had gone while I was there. No, the math department had changed. The English department had changed. And the science department had changed. But the practice department was the same one, Mr. Anderson. He was a wonderful head of the department, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Hall used to be the vice principal under Billy King, and when in the early 20s, I needed an assistant full-time. He was head of the Department of Science, Mr. William H. Hall. I asked Mr. Hall, would he like to come as the vice principal? He had taught me as a boy, incidentally. He said, no, I'd rather be a full-time science teacher. I said, very well. And that's when I got a first vice principal Polly had was Mr. Clark, Norman Clark, who subsequently was principal of the Clifton Park Junior High and then Patterson Park Senior High, Mr. Clark. And then after Mr. Clark, I got Mr. Harry Frank. And he was my vice principal up to the time I retired. And when I retired and I went to the University of Baltimore for a while, he went with me down there too for a while. But he died shortly after that.
How did you get the appointment or the opportunity to go to the University of Baltimore?
The chairman of the board, Mr. Lauren Langsdale, knew me. He lived next door to me here. And he knew me and asked me to come down. At first, not as the president, but simply to come with him. And I said, what do you want me for? Well, I had been on the Middle States Convention, the Middle States Association for years, and I knew all about evaluations, you see, for the city, and also on institutions for higher learning. And he thought he could pick my brains, as he said. And I was with him a couple of years, and then when Dr. Wilson retired, that's when he asked me if I would take the presidency. And that's, I think I've told you that story. So I was president, by acting president there, I guess about almost 4 years. Now, so many changes there. That building on Charles Street was built while I was there, and that they were planning for the Langsdale Library, which was being used, as you know now, quite materially, on Maryland Avenue. Then I stayed with him as a consultant for several years after Tom Pullen came as president of the university.
Did you help Dr. Pullen redraft the charter for the university?
No, I didn't get into that. That's not it. That was the Board of Trustees. That's their job.
Well, you mentioned before that you were there when it was integrated.
That's right. Well, I had a devil of a time to get the Board of Trustees to go along with me to integrate the school. I felt the time had come for the school, the university to be integrated. And they said, all right, you may bring in about a half a dozen. So I brought in some qualified, colored in. I don't know how many are down there today, but at the start of that time, during my administration, there never was any trouble at all. And I don't know that they've had any now. I don't think so. The great claim I claim in education, the contribution I made was teamwork and everything I had to do. That was my strength, building up a desire on the part of my associates to work with me for the welfare of our students. That was my greatest contribution to education. Because you see, I was a trained engineer from Cornell, and I had not taken any courses in education at all. My education came with experience, and it didn't hurt me a bit. It was a hard way to get it, but it came. But that's the claim I make that I've made to the of any benefit to the schools. The fact that we made a team out of all everything I had to do with. The Maryland Institute, University of Baltimore, and at Polytechnic.
What was the general routine you followed to get this teamwork?
Simply by talking with the people and telling what we'd like ought to do together, that's all. Pretty difficult to say one, two, three, four things that you did, but I think a man's personality had a lot to do with it, because I don't know how many high school principals could stand up in front of a group like I did, as I told you, and had them recite to me, yelling back these words like that and kidding them a bit, good bit. But when I'd walk from my seat to the center of the stage to talk to those boys, you could hear a pin drop. There wasn't a sound. And on certain occasions, if a boy in the balcony, usually they were in the balcony because they knew it was, if a boy in the balcony was talking while anybody on the stage was talking, I'd look up there and I'd say, I want the boy in the fourth row, third seat to come down here on the stage. And that was a long walk. And you could hear a pin drop until he came down. Then I'd say to him, now just tell me what's been going on down here on the stage. And then somebody would say, well, I can't tell you. I said, well, let's go to the office and we'll talk this over later. And that's all I'd say to him. But one day, one boy told me exactly what went on. Then all the boys left, you know, I was on the spot. So I had to get out of it. I said to the boys, I congratulate any boy who can show me as much as went on the stage and can talk at the same time. I congratulate you. You go back and take your place. I was back in again with my crowd, you see. Now, at the last assembly I used to have each year, I used to say to the boys, gee, I'm so glad, I'm sick and tired of looking at you. I'm glad we're having a vacation. And they'd applaud and applaud and applaud. Then the first time in September I had an assembly, I said, gee, I'm glad to see you. And they didn't say a word to that. I was just trying to do these things, tell how close I was to the boys, you know. Lucy and my wife and I once, we were up at Pocono Manor. And everywhere, every summer, we would run into the boys somewhere, even out the West Coast. But this happened to be a little canoe coming through the lake, and we walked around the lake to sit down in a pergola to take it easy before coming home. And we saw a boy coming along in a canoe with a yellow head girl, seemed to be having a grand time. So I went back to that first assembly. I said, I wish I could get one vacation away from you boys. I said, I can't go anywhere that don't run into you. I said, a year ago I was out in Oregon and I ran into somebody out there, Polygrad. Up in Canada I ran into them. And I said, the latest one was this one I just told you about. And after the assembly was over, a boy came up to me. He said, Mr. Dahl, I'm sorry I ruined your vacation. I was a guy in a canoe. Well, I could go on for hours telling you about amusing things that happened with him. The only reason I'm telling you this is to show you how close I was to my boy. Now, when the first, so every assembly I'd have with the new boys coming in, I'd say to them, about 300 or 400 of them, how many of you boys smoke cigarettes? And they'd hold up their hands, and I said, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. And then I'd reach down in my pocket and bring down a cigar in my pipe, and they'd laugh like Dickens. I said, oh, you can laugh now. But I said, listen, I didn't smoke until I was 21 years old. And I said, and then I'd give them a little pep talk on not smoking cigarettes when they were there, you see. And I had any number of boys come up to me. I often said it was like Billy Sunday. Come up to me and say, Mr. Duff, I'm not going to smoke a cigarette as long as I go to Polytechnic Institute. And you know about the ties, do you? All poly boys used to wear ties. I didn't make them wear ties. I used to say to them, all real poly boys wear ties. And this is rather amusing. The Tie Foundation of America heard about it and sent a representative to me. Is there such a thing as that? And I was in at the University of Baltimore. I said, yes, indeed, there are. You go up and look. And he went up and saw that all the boys had neckties on. They invited me to address the foundation up in New York in one of the hotels. And I had a grand time up there. Of course, I had a captive audience because that's what they wanted to hear. And they gave me a plaque. I've still got it upstairs. And only two people had been given an award, a membership, honorary membership in the Tie Foundation, President Truman and President Hoover. And I was the third one. And I felt right good about that. I've got it upstairs somewhere in New York. Well, I could go on for hours telling you amusing things, but I guess that's about enough, isn't it?
No, we've got some tape. You know, the football team used to say the huff instead
of... Yeah, that's right. Well, every time we go, when you start a football team, when I went there as principal, I called the coach down. I said, listen, you've been losing to City College a number of times now. I said, I didn't take this job to lose to City College. I said, I want you to go out there and beat the hell out of them. That was the football team. I was early having talks like that later. And he did. But every time a football team would start, I'd go out to Clifton Park, get them around me, and I'd say, now listen, you're going to represent this school. I want you to work hard and try to win. If you lose and you work hard, congratulations, just the same. But you must try to win. That's what we do in life. We got to win. Try to win. So don't be a worried if you don't win, so long as you try to win. And I'd give them a talk like that, and I didn't think it hurt them any. But I was very close to the football team. But they had to maintain their standards just the same. It just irritated me sometimes when the teacher, AA teacher, didn't consider what a football player was going through. And it cracked down on them just as hard as everybody else. Now, this is off the record. I didn't ever tell anybody that you must ease up on football players. But I used to say to the faculty, have a heart during the football season. But after the football season's over, then make them toe the mark just the same as everybody else. But don't lighten up on them, but just have a heart.
Some of the teachers, I think you had two teachers named Jansen.
Yeah, one of them, Henry, just retired. Holger Jansen and Henry Jansen. They were there when I was there. English teachers. Mm-hmm. Did you know them?
I knew all of them.
Yeah. Henry just retired. The other day I wrote him a letter. I get so many letters from people.
You had a shop teacher they used to call El Toro?
I don't remember him. Oh, yeah. Friedman? Oh, yeah. Nathan Friedman. He was a grand boy. He was loved by everybody. Used to lead a... You're a city boy, aren't you?
No.
That's right. And they had all kinds of names. They had another teacher, and they used to call him Tiger. Well, I just think somehow the boys and the teachers in my day were closer to each other than they are today. There was camaraderie there, which I always liked. I could kid the life out of these boys. For example, when I wanted to put over the idea, you better get some good marks to go to college, I'd act on the stage. I said, now listen, I'm going to be a poly boy with a very poor record. And I'd watch him come into my office. So I'd walk in, walk across the stage, and I'd come in and clap, you know. I said, well, what is it? He said, Mr. DeHuff, I'm taking this part. Will you please certify me to college? I looked at his record and turned it over, you know, and started and so on. I said to him, well, it's very doubtful, but you've done very well in everything but your scholarship. I said, if you'll sign a little contract with me, I think maybe I can sign it. He said, what's that? I said, I'd write on the back of your record, I hereby give my word of honor that if I'm certified, I will succeed. Now I said, if you sign that contract and keep it for a year at college, I'll write on the end if you come back to see me, contract kept, and I'll sign my name to it. Oh, I did that to hundreds of boys. And I said, but don't you ever come back to see me for anything. If you don't come back to tell me whether you did well or whether you didn't do well, at least come back to see me. You have to come back and tell me. I've had hundreds of boys tell me that kept them at college. The fact they had to see me and have that contract that they had signed, probably the first contract they ever signed, you see. And I used this many times. Then I said, now I'm going to serve them to a boy who has an average of 80% or better. I'd walk back across the stage, come up, I'd say, here, DeHuff, sign my record to Cornell, sign my record, and so on. I'd say, yes, sir. And the boys would die laughing at that, you know. The point I'm trying to make is that I was so close to them, I could say anything I wanted. And they'd take it. Now, my theory was, if you pat a boy on the back often enough, you can pat him farther down when if he does something wrong. But my teachers, many of them used to say to me, DeHuff, you compliment these boys too much. I said, that's impossible. I believe in complimenting boys extravagantly if you find something to compliment them about. I said, you're going to spoil them. I said, I haven't spoiled any yet. But I've had thousands of them. Well, there's many other things I could talk about.
Well, go ahead.
You won't want this in public, but this actually happened. We had one boy urinating on top of the seat, you know. And I looked at all the boys, I said, listen, boys, we have somebody here who ought to join our marksman's club. They didn't know what I was talking about because I always kept telling about join this club and join that club. I said, he ought to join the marksman club. I said, until he does, I want him to lift up the toilet seat. I thought they'd die laughing. 2,500 of them, you know, just screaming. And it stopped. It didn't have any more trouble. Now, how could you do that in college school? I just mentioned these things to show you how close I was to the boys, you know. I had a lot of fun with them. And yet, as I told you, you're perfect silence when I wanted to speak. And then the speakers that used to come there said they never saw such a group of boys. Every eye was right on the speaker all the time.
Who were some of the speakers that you had?
Oh, I had many college presidents, and then that famous preacher who was chaplain,
Peter Marshall.
You heard of Peter Marshall? He came over from Washington once at my request and came to my office before he went over to see the boys. He said, what shall I talk about? I said, listen, you've done a lot of talking to boys. You don't have to ask me for a subject. So he said, I think I'll tell him not to think. I said, oh my God. I hear I've been trying to tell him to think, you know. But his story was, he opened his story by, if the water bug would stop to think, it would sink. You know, keep going. So if you make a mistake, keep on going. Don't stop and think so long that you don't do anything. And he had those boys right on the edge of the chairs for about an hour. So when it was over, I took him down to Union Station. I said, how much do I owe you? I didn't have, in those days, the principal didn't have a nickel to spend. If you had guests, which I had many of them, colleges everywhere, I'd have to pay for their lunch out of my own pocket, that huge salary I made. And incidentally, I was getting $4,000 a year, imagine that. After 37 years, my salary jumped from $4,000 up to about $9,000. Isn't that remarkable? After 37 years. And now, I think the principal guy's putting around $15,000, $18,000, something like that. Well, anyhow, he said, you don't owe me anything. I owe you something, he said, for the opportunity of talking to those boys. He said, I never saw such a group in my life. And all the speakers that used to come. By the way, one of my good friends died the other day, Father Bunn. He was down at Georgetown. Every other year when he was at Loyola, I'd have him talk to the boys. And I'd invite speakers from all the colleges. But I'd say, you may not make a sale, just talk higher education. And if you have something that's different from any other college, tell them about it. And I always said the boys like to hear these speakers. Then I'd have such, I'd get the Navy band and United States Field Band and things like that. And those things were a lot of fun. The keys and the men liked them. They got this perfect attention. Because, you know, in some situations, the boys talked while the peace speaker was trying to talk, but not at Poly. I don't know how they are today. I hope it's the same thing. I know when I used to go over there when the four of them got sick, at Christmas time, they all stand up when I went up on the stage, which I thought was remarkable, because they didn't even know me, you know. I'm just a tradition over there. No, what else?
What else do you remember?
I could talk about for hours. You said, how do I do certain things? Every time I'd have a faculty meeting, which is once a month, I said, got a speech on your mind, get up and let's have it. Gave everybody an opportunity to talk. And I'd meet the student council a couple times a week. I'd say, all right, boys, what's on your mind? And they all take, all have a chance to talk. Walter Feldman, member of the class of 1915, by the way, he has a $50,000 on interest for a scholarship in my name, which I think is grand. Another class has $50 to the best boy in English with my name, too. He had just mentioned that to show you the fact that they haven't forgotten the old man. And so many of them have come to see me, writing to me. These are just the notes that I had. I was going to give a talk to one of the classes. I never used it. Of course, I believe in athletics and I believe in this good scholarship. I believe in both. I wish you'd ask me a question.
All right, towards the end here, you had a testimonial dinner, 1958.
That's right.
Right. Do you remember who was in attendance at your testimonial dinner?
No, but there were about 700 graduates there, I know that. They came from all around. That's what they gave me, that testimonial dinner. The first, they were the third one. Dr. Kaplan got the first one as a physicist, head of geophysical year for the United States government. And the second one went to Walter Feldman, who was president of the Worthington Corporation. And I was on the committee that selected those two, and this year when they made me honor him, they gave me the honor, I wasn't on the committee, and I couldn't vote against myself, so they gave it to me, you see, number three. It's only three I've been given through all these years.
Would you elaborate a little bit more on your limited activity at the University of Baltimore, those 3 years?
There's not a whole lot to say, excepting that my great problem there was what's facing them today, money. I had an awful time with the financial end of it because they didn't have enough money to get good men, professors, you know. I never will forget, I wrote once to about 8 retired PhDs from different universities and gave them the top salary, and not one of them answered my letter. Didn't have enough money to pay for them, you know. The salary scale was very low. Until I went there, incidentally, they didn't have any rating at all. Everybody was Mr. When I went there, I established the rank for the first time in the University of Baltimore. You know what I mean, associate professor and so on. And that's still there today, which of course meant the first time they ever had a salary scale was when I was there. Everybody knew what to expect, so much a year and so on. It was very low, but at least you knew what you came for and you knew what you were going to get if you stayed. And then introduced a pension system while I was there too for the teachers, which is still in effect. And the college, and in the paper the other day I read, they're still having their financial troubles. They want to try to some affiliation with the University of Maryland. But that was my main problem as far as the students were concerned. It was the pressure of working with them and the faculty. And I will say this, though, that they didn't have a program there. They had no liberal arts program when I went there. They had a 2-year program, that's all. Then they go into the business and had the law there. So I started the liberal arts 4-year program because the lawyers, you see, It used to be 2 years you could take the bar exam, then they required three. By that time, we had 3 years of liberal arts, you see. Now then, later we got four, but I was responsible for putting in that liberal arts program down there. The first time they had one there. It's just mostly law and business. That's what it started for. But that was quite a job working with State Department, and Tom Pullen was then president of the superintendent, I guess, of the State Department, that superintendent, either one or the other, I've forgotten. But I worked with him on that, and we worked up the curricula for 3 years of the liberal arts. It always amused me here, a graduate engineer, spending all my life in technical education. It took an engineer and someone to get him started in a liberal arts program, which today is so essential for what they're trying to do in their law and the rest of it. And of course, we didn't even start in my day to get the accreditation for the Middle States. I didn't see any point in it because the graduates didn't go higher. And personally, even though I knew all the people connected with the Middle States Association, having been on the Committee for Higher Institutions, I didn't see any point.